I'd like you to open your Bible to Revelation 13, where I want to begin at verse number 11 in a little bit. First, I feel the need to kind of do a quick synopsis of all the stuff we've talked about so far in this particular vision, starting in chapter 12, the vision of the great war between the seed of woman and the seed of the dragon. And in order to understand it, we have to go back to the very beginning of that war, which is recorded in Genesis chapter 3, where after Satan, through the mode of the serpent, convinced Adam and Eve to mistrust God and to sin, God began handing out the consequences from that sin. And when he spoke to the serpent, whom we should also refer to as the dragon, Satan, he said, I am going to put enmity, which is a state of warfare. I am going to put enmity between your seed and her seed, meaning the woman. He, the seed of woman, is going to stomp you on the head or crack you on the head, which is clearly a reference to what Jesus did by providing atonement for sin. And God said, you will strike or hit him on the heel, which is clearly a reference to the atoning death of Jesus. And so that is where the story of this vision of the war between the seed of woman and the seed of the serpent, or the seed of the dragon, began. And it went through time, as recorded in the Old Testament, being updated on information regarding who that seed of the woman was going to be. And that is why we talked about this, the woman in Revelation chapter 12 is the line of the faithful from Adam and Eve's time forward, but particularly funneling into the ethnic Jewish line. Because by the end of the book of Genesis, we know that the line is funneled through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, Judah, because there's a prophecy there in chapter 49 about Judah having the scepter in his family. Then we get into the next sections of the Old Testament, and it's fine-tuned even farther into the family of Jesse, and then into the line of David. And then, over time, we get to the genealogy of Jesus himself, which goes through Nathan, the son of David and Bathsheba, the brother, the younger brother of King Solomon. And finally, Jesus comes in to the world through the Virgin Mary. And that, of course, is also portrayed in the Revelation chapter 12 vision, where the woman gives birth to a son that will rule the nations. And then we know that this war culminates in this first coming of Jesus with his atoning death and his glorious resurrection. And the next thing after that is his ascension, which is mentioned in this vision of the great war, and how the child or the son was caught up into the heavens to the right hand of the Father. And he remains there until the final phase of the war is going to come to its climax, which we're working our way toward here in the book of Revelation. Now, in the vision that we've been looking at, we fast forward from the ascension of Jesus all the way up to the moment that the final 3.5 day or final 3.5 year day of the Lord begins. That is the breaking of the sixth seal in our other vision. But it is also the moment that Michael and his loyal angels kick Satan and his rebel angels out of the heavenly realm down to planet Earth. And heaven celebrates, but they give a woe for Earth because the dragon has now come to you and he is full of great wrath, knowing that his time is short. And we know it is short. It's only 3.5 years or 42 months or 1,270 full days, of which a little 10 short of that is devoted to the work of the two witnesses, speaking of whom we know in our Revelation 12 passage that once Satan crash lands on planet Earth along with his rebel angels, he apparently must be in the Middle East, must be near ethnic Israeli people, and he tries to take out his wrath against the messianic portion of those people nearby. And there is a miraculous intervention that protects that woman, protects that group of people that woman represents. And we're told that she's given two wings like an eagle to fly to the place where she will be nourished for 1,260 days. And I've told you, I think it makes the best sense that those two eagle's wings are the two witnesses whose ministry is exactly that long. And so she disappears with them over to probably the Temple Mount, where they will remain for the bulk of the 3.5 years. And Satan, ticked off, goes out to find another means by which he can punish anyone and everyone that is waiting with expectation for the coming King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He goes and wars against that woman's other children who keep the commandments and follow Jesus. And that's when he goes to the sea and he finds the last most recent representation of world government that's in the bag for him. And that's the seven-headed dragon that comes up out of the sea. And it looks a little bit like past representations of this world government he's used. And we went to the book of Daniel, chapter number 7, and chapter number 2, and chapter number 8. We went to Revelation chapter 17, and we pulled together a whole bunch of the decoding things that we needed. And we find out that this beast government has been a series of governments in the bag for Satan in his war against the seed of woman ever since the time that Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were kind of on the scene and got the whole seed of woman moved from the Holy Land to Egypt. Because the first head that came and went on this seven-headed beast is Egypt. And it was blasphemous. It tried to do the Israelis in by working them to death and killing off their firstborn. Once they got out of Egypt and they came to their promised land, the next big troublemaker was Assyria. That's the next head that rises and dies trying to destroy the seed of woman promise line. And they were the Nazis of the Old Testament era. The next head, the third head, was Babylon. And we know that Daniel was very familiar with that, and his prophecies really kind of start with the Babylon head. And Babylon crushed the homeland of the Israeli people and took them into exile. They did this with God's permission because of sin, but they still did a lot of damage during the midst of it, and they end up being punished for it And so that head dies, so to speak, and a new head rises. That's the Medo-Persian Empire. And they do some damage to the Israelis in this war, but the Israelis win out again because of God's continued grace and prophetic insight. And they are replaced by the Macedonian Greeks, who again try at one point to wipe out the Israelis and their faith, and they fail. And so that head dies. That brings us then to the head that is in the time of John the Apostle, who is writing down this vision. That's Rome. And we know Rome also did some damage to this line. They even ended the homeland of the Israelis again because of sin, mind you, but overkill that was involved in it. But then we are told, John is told, and he passes it on to us, that in the future there's going to be another head on this beast. And this head will also die. And this head seems to be what a lot of people try to refer to, and I think it's a reasonable use of the phrase, a revived Roman Empire. Because when the Roman Empire fell apart, first into two pieces and then into multiple kingdoms, and then those kingdoms eventually become modern states and even expand into other parts of the globe, that empire never really totally disappears. There's always bits and pieces and fragments of it in the politics and in the community, in the customs, the language, the vocabulary. There's always bits and pieces of Rome there, as well as, by the way, Babylon and Medo-Persia and Greece. And it kept trying to be put back together again. Multiple people try to keep putting it back together. The most recent candidate that tried that and failed and did great damage to the ethnic Israelis in the process was Nazi Germany's Adolf Hitler trying to have the Fourth Reich, which was, in effect, trying to reestablish the Roman Empire. But eventually, we are given the indication it'll get its act together enough that it'll think that it can declare peace and security is available through its auspices. And I believe, and that's why I keep telling you, that I think NATO, which was established in the aftermath of World War II, I think that might be playing into this idea of a world government. I think that the United Nations, which was also established right after World War II, and even has in the Greek text of its original documentation, in its preamble, the words that appear in Paul's writings where he says they will be saying peace and security, those two words, peace and security, but then sudden destruction will come upon them as a flood. And so I think the United Nations are probably playing into this fulfillment. And I also think the European community, which is a major player in the Mediterranean basin and in the western portion of what used to be the Roman Empire. So all of these things together, I think, help us understand that we're probably existing in the time that head on the beast, the seventh head, is probably alive. But then will come the day of the Lord. and all the chaos. The sun goes dark, the moon goes blood red, the stars, metaphorical language for the fallen angels, Satan and his crew, falling from the heavens onto planet Earth. I think all of that is going to bring about great chaos and kill all the existing governments. They'll fracture and fall apart. And so that's why I think what we see now in the United Nations and in the European Union and in NATO and its associated alliances, all that is going to collapse in the chaos. And we are told in our phrasing that we get out of here that it'll look like that head, the seventh head, has been killed. It's received a mortal wound. But then it's going to come back to life again, which is why the decoding in Revelation chapter 17 talks about the seventh head and the eighth head are one and the same. It's just was killed, brought back to life. So that's why it's from seventh to the eighth. That eighth head of the beast, that revived seventh head, is the one that's going to have the 10 horns on it. And we talked last time about how these 10 horns, which were the 10 toes in Daniel chapter 2, they are going to be 10 kings that rise up out of this chaotic period at the beginning of the final 3.5 years. They will be key in bringing things back online, bringing things back into an organized state. And so their new government will look something like the old, but it will be distinct enough to count it as a new eighth government. And three of those leaders are going to be compromised in some way by an 11th leader. And that guy is the one that's going to seize control. And more to the point, that's the guy that Satan is going to back as the final world ruler. He is the guy that will be the final mouthy horn on the beast. He is the one that will carry out a campaign of annihilation against anyone and everyone that stands in his way. And he will be the puppet of the dragon. And this is all going to take place toward the beginning of the final 3.5 year period. That brings us up then to Revelation chapter 13, where verse number 11 starts telling us there's another player that rises right around this same time. Revelation 13, 11. Then I saw another beast rising up out of the earth. So this one's not coming out of the sea. This is coming from the land. It's coming from the earth. It had two horns like a lamb, so it is lamb-like. And who is the lamb, the genuine lamb, in the symbolism of the book of Revelation? That is correct. Jesus. So this is a pseudo-Jesus. It is a fraud Jesus. It is, if you will permit me to use the terminology of John the Apostle from 1st and 2nd John, it is the anti, meaning in the place of, Christos. This is anti-Christos, the one that stands up in the place of Christ. And I know that you're probably used to, because of popular books and popular teachings along these lines, you're probably used to hearing the final world ruler being referred to as Antichrist. And he certainly is an Antichrist of a sort. But I think this is the more problematic personage in that line, in that vein. Because it says, while he has two horns like a lamb, so he looks like Jesus, it spoke like a dragon. And who is the symbol of the dragon? That's Satan himself. So this is a dragon in lamb's clothing. It is Satan in a dress trying to pass himself off as Jesus. Verse 12. Now, what does this new character do? It exercises all the authority of the first beast in its presence. So this new being becomes a major agent for the beast government and the beast leader. And what is the thing that he is charged with overseeing? It says, and he makes the earth and its inhabitants worship the first beast whose mortal wound was healed. So this new player is going to be the promoter of a new religion. And this religion is going to be focused on not just simply the world government, the beast government. It's going to be focused on the personage that's running that government. The 11th horn, the mouthy horn, the beast leader, the Antichrist, if you wish. The guy that apparently himself had a deadly wound but came back from that. And remember, I told you this might be one of those cases where what happened with the government also happened with the person. So that in the chaos that kicks off the final 3.5 years, this individual human being either died or came very close to dying, and Satan's intervention on his behalf brought him back. And so this impresses everybody on planet Earth. And so this new beast, whom we will start referring to by his other term, the false prophet, this false prophet is going to pump up the fame of the beast leader and insist everybody needs to give their accolades and their worship and their loyalty to the beast leader. And he does it by the following, verse 13. It, meaning the false prophet, performs great signs, even making fire come down from heaven to earth in front of the people. Now, don't be overly impressed with that as a supernatural sign. Because remember, Satan and his bunch have been booted out of the supernatural realm. So I am going to suggest to you that what verse 13 is presenting is not supernatural, but it is actually the revival of technology coming up out of the chaos. They're going to repurpose technology so that perhaps even, shall we say, some sort of laser, some satellite-deployed laser can be used to burn people on planet Earth for not having their loyalty to the beast leader. Now, that is a counterfeit miracle in mockery or in pretense of what the two prophets actually can do. They can speak a word against those that oppose their work, and they will have supernatural fire come down out of heaven on them. Verse 14, and by the signs that it is allowed to work in the presence of the beast, it deceives those who dwell on the earth, telling them to make an image for the beast that was wounded by the sword and yet lived. So this guy says, we need to make something special that everybody can have a relationship, a personal relationship with this beast leader. Now, some people have thought, well, this is some sort of idol. I don't think so. I think this may be, in fact, something that we're just starting to have a concept about, and that is, I think this is going to be artificial intelligence, which is going to be programmed with all the aspects of this beast leader, but it will be able, through all of the media platforms it has access to have a personal interaction with everyone. And we already know that that sort of personal interaction technology is available. In some countries, when you pass by a vending machine, it'll call you by name because it can sense your personal identification in your pocket, and it even knows your taste. It's got marketing information, and it can recommend things to you. And so this feels as if the machine knows you and wants to help you out. And so take that up, build it on an even bigger scale worldwide, with the beast leader being the personage, the AI that is in all these different platforms. And I think that's what we're talking about. And so verse 15, it was allowed to give breath to the image of the beast so that the image of the beast might even speak and might cause those who would not worship the image of the beast to be slain. And so this is some pretty heavy-duty stuff that we're starting to talk about here. But you can appreciate that this is now going to be the push, the hard push for everybody on planet Earth to join the beast kingdom or die. And soon, Jesus will, of course, send an alternate message, which is, take the mark of the beast, and you will never live.